You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Hello, I'm Govinda Gill with the BBC News. China has announced retaliation against the United States for the tariffs imposed by Donald Trump on Wednesday, bringing the world closer to an all-out trade war. Beijing's new measures include an additional 34% levy on all imports from the US. The Chinese authorities will also control exports of some valuable rare earths to the American market. In addition, more US firms have been placed on a list of unreliable entities. Stephen McDonald is in Beijing and has more.
This is disastrous for US companies wanting to sell into the huge Chinese market. 34% on all US goods coming in here, I mean, that's quite a whack. It's even worse if you're a US agricultural producer, because remember, they already had 10 or 15% tariffs placed on them by China following Donald Trump's last tariffs. Now then you've got another 34% on top of that. So that, you know, chicken, pork, beef, you name it. And this is Trump's heartland.
Global stock markets have continued to plunge in response to President Trump's tariff announcement. The German share index is down more than 5.5%. US stock futures also fell sharply, signalling more losses on Wall Street when trading opens shortly. An investment bank, JP Morgan, is forecasting a 60% chance of global recession by the end of the year. The US Secretary of State says it will soon be clear whether Russia is serious about peace in Ukraine, and Washington will judge Moscow by its actions, not its words. Marco Rubio made the remarks amid growing disquiet in Ukraine and among European leaders about what they view as delaying tactics by President Putin. He spoke to reporters after a NATO foreign ministers meeting in Brussels.
Peace means you stop shooting at each other. I mean, it's as simplistic as that. Now, obviously, look, there's all kinds of conditions for a final peace, and you have to work with both sides. And I've said from the beginning, both sides make concessions. Those concessions will depend on what Ukraine will accept and Russia will accept. But we have to make concrete steps towards peace. What we're not interested in, and I'm not accusing them of this, I'm just telling you what we're not interested in is negotiations about negotiations.
Military chiefs from Britain and France are in Ukraine to discuss the possible deployment of troops from allied countries in the event of any potential ceasefire. Britain and France have been spearheading preparations for such security guarantees, coordinating with a number of other European and non-European allies. But Russia categorically opposes the idea of stationing any forces from NATO countries in Ukraine. South Korea's former president apologised for his actions after the country's top court upheld his impeachment, immediately stripping him of power. The Supreme Court said that Yoon Suk-yeol's short-lived decision to impose martial law last December had a serious negative impact. You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC.
WRT thanks its listener sponsors and FPC Live, presenting singer-songwriter Iron and Wine at the Orpheum Theatre on Tuesday, April 22nd at 7 p.m. Iron and Wine comes to the Orpheum Theatre with a full band performing his new album, Light Verse. Joby Riccio opens the show. More information and tickets are available at madisonorpheum.com.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year. And to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th, for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboom Box. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.
It's the first Friday 8 o'clock buzz of April in the year 2025. I'm Andy Moore. Our online producer and front office supervisor, Elliot LeBrun, is out sick today. And Elliot, we miss you. Folks, thing is, Elliot has a habit of calling in sick at the last minute. It's just gone on and on. It's highly suspicious. We may have to report him on up to Charlie and to the powers that be here. The last time this happened, wait a minute. It's never happened. Elliot is, Jim, he's one of the most dedicated members of the Friday Buzz team. I think you would agree. The first most dedicated member of the team, of course, is me. Who's the next most dedicated, Jim?
Oh, it's got to be Anker. I mean, he's coming in every week with the music picks and the selection for the show. It's just, that's a lot of work.
It would have been really easy for you to say you. But I'm on your team with that one. And I really like your humility this morning. Normally your ego is so gigantic, I can barely get in the office here. But that is true. We have the best DJ in the business. So maybe we should put him at number one. Okay, tied at number one. It's a four-way tie, I think, Jim, for a most dedicated Buzz team member. We've got a stable of dedicated semi-regular guests on this show too. People, I believe you, our listeners, I hope, have come to know and love. Folks like Trump contrarian Charlie Sykes, who happens to be the very first guest on this morning's show. I get to talk about the madness and sadness and the gladness of this political week. And after we talk politics with Charlie at about 8:30 or so.
Excuse me, Andy.
Page.
Andy.
Yeah, Jim, what's up?
Well, speaking of semi-regular guests, you have one on the line right now.
Charlie Sykes, right. That's good. Tell him we're almost done with the open, okay?
It's not Charlie.
Who is it?
Well, it's the guy who can't say goodbye.
Oh, man! Oh, man! The guy who can't say goodbye. You're calling from L.A. It's 6:08 a.m. on the West Coast. We've got to take this call. We haven't heard from him in weeks. Let's go ahead and put him on, Jim. Hey, guy who can't say goodbye. Hey, are you there?
Hey, yeah. Hey, Andy. It's good to hear your voice, you know, even though I never miss the show. But,
no.
You know, good to hear your voice on the phone.
Well, it's good to hear your voice, too. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and what a big week for Wisconsin, yeah, hey?
You got that right, guy who can't say goodbye. You got that right.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, big week, yeah. Especially Tuesday, huh?
You say that again. Big win.
It was kind of unbelievable, wasn't it?
It really was. It was.
I must have been excited to actually be in Wisconsin.
I'm telling you, people were super excited.
I mean, even out here on West Coast time, it just ended so fast and so, you know, so dramatically.
It did for sure, didn't it?
And the margin of the win, holy cats.
Yeah.
Who would have guessed the spread like that?
Exactly. No one is what I'm thinking. No one did. You got that right.
Yeah, it just gave people from Wisconsin who live across the country, you know, folks like me, something to really cheer about, you know, something to really get fired up about during these crazy times.
Well, for sure. Nobody, and I mean nobody, had Crawford beating Schimmel by 10 points.
By what?
10-point beatdown of the Republican MAGA candidate for the high court. And, you know, no one saw that kind of curb stomping coming, did they?
What are you talking about?
Liberal Judge Susan Crawford whooping the snot out of conservative Judge Brad Schimmel. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm talking about the Brewers 5-0 route over the Royals Tuesday. That's what I'm talking about.
Listen, guy who can't say goodbye, I'm glad you checked in. We got to get going with the program.
Yeah, I mean, like Eric Hass and Christian Yelich hitting those solo
Brewers
homers.
Brewers win.
Pure unadulterated power in the bullpen, by God.
This is nuts. But we're talking this morning about a different Wisconsin win on Tuesday. Guy who can't say goodbye.
Right? Like,
and you're talking
Chad
about,
Patrick's pitching, you know, the guy with two Brewers first names. Win. That kid's got something.
On I mean,
two.
Tuesday.
No, actually, no, no, not two. It's three scoreless innings
Brewers
to start the
win.
Game. And, well, remember, Milwaukee.
Yeah, guy who can't say goodbye. We got to wrap it up. I hope you have a really good weekend. Guy who can't say goodbye.
This is insignificant improvement. It was like that movie.
Jim, we got to have. We got to let him go.
Or whatever.
Guy who can't say goodbye. We got to move. Jim, can we get this? We got to. We got to get him off.
Think of any baseball.
Oh God, thank you, Jim. I love talking with the guy who can't say goodbye. But and I know, you know, it's predictable, and we shouldn't fall into the trap every time. But he can't say goodbye. Thank you, Jim, for saving us, because we got a show to do. It's a good one at 8:45. Members of the Crackpot Pop band German Art Students are here. They're going to introduce us to their new album. At 8:30, a Wisconsin author introduces us to fellow hikers. He met walking the Appalachian Trail. It's a good springtime topic. And, of course, Anchor's picks for your weekend live music plans are ahead as well. It's the Get Well Soon Elliot LeBron edition of the Friday Buzz. Charlie Sykes starts this out first in just a minute. Let's get buzzing. According to Jim Morrison and the Doors, thank you for that encore. It's a Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Nobody saw it coming on Tuesday. Not Ben Wickler, not Susan Crawford, not Elon Musk, certainly not Brad Schimmel. I'm talking, of course, of the 5-0 beatdown of the Kansas City Royals by the Milwaukee Brewers. Kidding. One thing I'm wondering, and I wondered this the whole time that Musk wore the cheese head. I thought about this. If he was asked, could Elon Musk actually recite Schimmel's opponent by name? That haunted me. I bet he couldn't. Or if he was pressed, could he actually name Schimmel? I don't know. But I sincerely wonder. The best thing we can do, though, I suppose, is to ask someone who does know these things. His reader supported to the contrary Substack is, well, if you don't read it, you may still be under the impression that we're the crazy ones. To the contrary, recalibrates that daily. Charlie Sykes joins us now from an exclusive bunker he shares with his dogs in the Milwaukee area. Good morning, Charlie, and welcome back to The Buzz.
It's a happy day in the bunker today.
So, to be honest, do you think Elon Musk could name Brad Schimmel's opponent, you know, last week if he had to?
Dude, I have no idea. I have no idea what goes on inside of Elon Musk's brain, and I think that's becoming harder and harder. But yeah, the image of him wearing the cheese hat and handing out the money, it didn't really work, did it? It didn't play out the way that he hoped.
It's back to the drawing board. Rumbles of Musk getting some reconsideration from the Orange in Chief are happening now. You think Trump will wait a week after this failure, something he always does to distance himself from the personnel mess at hand, then he'll make Musk meet between the treads?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, he's distracted everyone from Elon Musk's faceplant by trashing the world economy, so that's on the agenda today. But at some point, you knew they were going to break up, right? There was only room for one. But the problem is that, and of course, Trump has no loyalty to anyone. And the moment he sees that Elon Musk is a political liability, politically toxic, he's going to want to distance himself. Like, who is that guy? Who, you know, who dat? I don't even know that guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was the guy that brought me coffee. On the other hand, Elon Musk is not going to be easy to scrape off the bottom of Donald Trump's shoes, is he? I mean, he's still the richest man in the world, right?
Well that's my follow-up question on this. The one thing that Trump seems stumped by is dissing people he views as strong or rich.
Yep. He's got a fetish for that. He loves that. And you know, nobody's richer than Elon Musk. So, but Elon Musk is not going to go away quietly. Elon Musk loves being co-president. He loves the celebrity. He loves the power. He loves the clout. I mean, here he is dancing on that stage in Green Bay. You know, like he's some sort of a freaking rock star. So, the egos of billionaires are not easily soothed, let's put it that way.
Let's go back to Tuesday night, not to live in the past, but let's say it's 10 p.m. You saw the results. What was your reaction, Charlie?
Well, I was surprised by the margin. I did not know what was going to happen. Wisconsin is really increasingly kind of a black box, isn't it? You just don't know where, you know, who's going to turn out, what it's going to be like. But, you know, given the amount of money that was dumped into the state, you know, virtually any result was conceivable. But I guess my first reaction was, quite frankly, just relief that Donald Trump and Elon Musk were not going to be able to do the happy dance over Wisconsin. I mean, if they had won, this would have really been wind at their backs. This would have emboldened them even more than they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not suggesting that they are not emboldened, but this would have created a narrative that they are unstoppable. Instead, we got the counter narrative that, hey, wait, you know, maybe something's happening out there.
You know, back to Tuesday night's results and those moments, it's kind of BS when you can say a highlight is someone losing an election and making a concession and telling his audience to accept the results. But I've been thinking about that all week long, that happened, that Schimmel said the system worked.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because this has almost become a flex now on the right to question the results of the election or to exit in a very ungracious way. And Schimmel accepted the results, was gracious. He didn't pull a Dan Kelly who lashed out at his opponent after he lost. So yeah, it was a good thing. And I guess, you know, this was one of the things that as I was watching this, you know, because I've known Brad Schimmel for years. Brad Schimmel is a former attorney general. He mean, you know, not like his politics, but to watch his transformation into sort of a, you know, MAGA chode was really something. And it kind of reminded us that okay, I had to do all this, but I'm not going full whatever it is. I'm not going full Elon Musk.
You know, I sound like the parent of a toddler, but I mean, it's setting an example. It's normalizing a concession speech, calling your opponent. It normalized it in its own micro way, I think.
I hope so. You know, you hope so because there's so many other things that have been normalized, and
yeah,
it feels like just a tiny flicker of hey, that's the way things are supposed to be in a world in which every single day you're finding out that the rules have been changed. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the momentum that could have been and the wind at the backs of the MAGA group if Schimmel had been victorious. Let's speak to the momentum that this might maybe give to Dems. Does this have legs, like midterm legs, you think?
Well, okay. So what I wrote the other day was there's always the temptation to, you know, read too much into these off-year elections. And I said at the time that I think we should succumb to that temptation and read a lot into it. The reason that this does have implications is the size of the vote. 2.4 million votes. This is an April odd year election. Now, I think it was Craig Gilbert who pointed out that turnout really is November midterm election numbers. So this is not just a fluke. This is not just some sort of a you know, a weird blip in a low turnout election. This was a huge turnout. And if the electorate looks in November of 2026, if the electorate looks in Wisconsin like it did on Tuesday, then Republicans are in for a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to dog lover Charlie Sykes. His daily political Substack called To the Contrary has over 17 million subscribers. Charlie, you're on your way to that, I'm sure. Yeah, Tuesday's high court election in Wisconsin, an indictment. I'm sure you've been asked this week, but an indictment of Musk or of Trump?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. And the answer is both of them. I mean, you know, Elon Musk put in the money, but every single piece of literature that I got here at my house, a pro-Schimmel piece of literature, had Donald Trump's face on it. Every single pro-Schimmel piece of literature was, you have to vote for Schimmel in order to support Donald Trump. Schimmel will protect Donald Trump. No, we won the White House, now we need to win the courthouse. So Elon Musk made this election a referendum on himself, but he also made it a referendum on Donald Trump. So you can't go all in on, you must vote for Brad Schimmel if you support Donald Trump, and then claim that, well, no, Trump had nothing to do with the outcome.
Yeah, true. Both things can't be true. Speaking of Trump, let's talk about tariffs. Trump gets what he wants, announcing them is what I see. Just announcing them. He can announce them every day. It seems to announce them every day. He'll continue, though, to retract and reframe and redefine them his entire term, won't he?
I don't know. Yes, that would normally be his strategy, but the danger of that, of course, is that he's injected massive uncertainty into the world marketplace, and the markets do not like that. And so right now we have this weird thing where Republicans on Capitol Hill are scrambling around saying, oh, he doesn't mean it, he's still just negotiating. The White House is saying, no, we're not just negotiating, this is what we're doing. They're also coming up with ways in which they want to spend all the money. Look, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, you know, yes, we're going to finance everything we're doing with the revenue from these massive tariffs, which may go away tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The incoherence is just staggering. And I think that this is what is disorienting.
Charlie, I think the policy is the politics. The tariff won't be in place long enough to hit the working family in the wallet, conceivably. That's my theory. He'll just get credit for the wrecking ball / middle finger announcements of the next incarnation of the tariff, right?
I'm not sure what credit he's getting at the moment. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And it would not be inconsistent with Donald Trump. But keep in mind that he's had a fetish for tariffs for 40-50 years.
That's true.
This is not just a one-off.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has very few core principles.
Yeah.
Election denialism, his own ego, and tariffs would be the three.
And what kept him, and I think maybe the answer may be more obvious than I'm thinking, but what kept him from going all in on tariffs his first term?
Well, I think in the first term there were grown-ups around.
Yeah.
There were people who would pointed out how the markets would react. I don't think that he had the level of arrogance and confidence that he has right now. I mean, I'm writing my newsletter today on the radical arrogance of this administration. And those are two different things. Number one, he is not pursuing a conservative or incremental agenda. It is a radical transformational agenda. And it is fueled by this incredible arrogance that he can do anything, get away with anything, that he can bring anyone to his knees. And quite frankly, you understand why he says that as you look around and watch the billionaires take a knee, media taking a knee, the law firms, universities taking a knee. And so here's a guy who is just pumped up with his own hubris right now. And you didn't have that kind of confidence in his first term. Plus, you actually still had a few Republicans who were willing to push back against him, and I'm not sure that that's really the case now. But we'll find out on this issue.
Well, let's go there just for a moment, and just for a quick moment before we do, listeners, you can read the essay that Charlie's working on today on his Substack. To the Contrary, Charlie, you and I have talked about sort of the chicken-hearted Republican partisans that smell Trump's black leather glove and submission. But the Senate is pushing back on some of this tariff mischief. What do you think about that?
Let's see. Let's see what they do. They passed a resolution the other day repealing the emergency order with Canada, but that doesn't go anywhere. That will die in the House of Representatives and then would also face a Trumpian veto power. We are here right now because Congress, and I'm still shocked by this, I have to tell you, Congress just surrendered all of its powers to the president. I mean, I don't know about you, but I certainly did not know until a few years ago that the president could unilaterally, by fiat, raise taxes by $6 trillion. I thought there was this constitutional, you know, balance and that Congress had the power of the purse and all that Article One stuff. And basically the House of Representatives and the Senate basically said, screw that. We don't need that. You can do that. We're going to give that to you. They could have clawed back that power at some point, but they did not. So I think a lot of this right now is kind of hand-waving, and it is performative, and I don't know that they will be able to muster the opposition. But look, there are still Republicans out there who are going, okay, we're willing to buy a lot, but if you're going to trash the economy, if people's 401ks are going to crash, if we're going to see layoffs, maybe we need a little bit of distance. But I've kind of learned, as I'm sure you have over the last 10 years, the default position will be do not count on Republicans ever to resist or push back against Donald Trump. Just don't. Don't do it. Don't go for that football again.
Jim Wilson, it's time to cue up that music. Charlie, it's dear listeners, if you're a regular listener to this program and our conversation with Charlie Sykes, this may be your favorite part of all. We close. The time travels so quickly when we talk with Charlie Sykes, but it's time for... That's the music, too. Time for the Charlie Sykes lightning round. That's when we ask Charlie a very brief question or mention a name or a thing or an item, and Charlie takes 10 seconds to blow it out of the sky. Charlie, you ready for the lightning round for April
4th? I am always ready. Absolutely. Right.
Okay, lightning round, item number one. Bob Uecker.
Oh, we're going to miss him so much. Really, spring in Wisconsin is not the same without Bob.
What, item number two, what even is the meaning of Tesla anymore?
I don't know. They're the ugliest trucks I've ever seen. Have you seen a Cybertruck? I mean, it looks like...
Not in person.
First time you see it, you'll say, this is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It looks like it was designed by a kindergartner.
Okay. Item number three, and Charlie's like lightning rounds April 4. What do billionaires know that we don't know?
Nothing. No. I mean, this is the interesting thing, is the arrogance of billionaires is truly profound, because they're surrounded by people who always tell them how smart they are, and they do not understand the limits of their intelligence. Howard Lutnick being, example number one.
Charlie Sykes, lightning round number five. And this is a semi-serious question based on a line I heard you use in an interview with Katie Couric this week. You referred to, quote, the laws of political gravity, unquote. What are the laws of political gravity?
Well, the laws of political gravity are when you screw up, when you trash the economy, that it shows up in the polls, that voters say, okay, no, we're not going to go along with that. What we don't know is whether they apply to a personality cult like MAGA or not. But if the laws of political gravity still exist, what you're seeing happening today and yesterday will have significant impact.
And this is our final lightning round question for you, Charlie, before we let you get into your weekend, and this is it. How much of the MAGA base, in your opinion, stay home when they don't have an opportunity to vote for Trump?
Well, I think that's exactly what Wisconsin was all about, that you have a tremendous part of this base that will turn out for Donald Trump, but they will not turn out for anyone who is not named Donald Trump. And that they will cut Donald Trump slack that they will not cut to anyone else. So that's a warning sign for Republicans.
Charlie Sykes, it's always fun. Thank you for joining us on the Friday Buzz again.
Always my pleasure.
All right. Have a great weekend.
All right, bye-bye.
Charlie Sykes is an MSNBC commentator, the author of How the Right Lost Its Mind, and the producer and host of the daily Substack To the Contrary, which is a reader-supported service. Okay. Lots of buzz ahead, including Encore's picks coming up after some music and boring announcements. You're listening to An Endangered Species, Public Media, WRTFM 89.9 Community Radio, coming into your ears since 1975. WRTFM.org online since, I don't know when the online stuff started. Both things sprouting up with your help from the newly carpeted confines of South Bedford Street in Madison, Wisconsin. Get well, Elliot LeBrun. It's 8:31.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Blue Stem Jazz, presenting Gustavo Cortinas's Crisis Knows No Borders at the North Street Cabaret on Saturday, April 12th at 8 p.m. Composer and percussionist Gustavo Cortinas brings melodic and uplifting compositions rooted in social justice. He is joined by Mark Feldman, John Arabagon, and Dave Miller. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Folks, you were so busy voting this week that you didn't scratch down any ideas for what you're going to do this weekend with your live music plan, but you're in luck because it's time now for Encore's Picks. But first, here's Jim Wilson with the Encore's Picks disclaimer.
Encore's Picks are not influenced by any outside entities. Encore consults with an advisory board of one, Encore Malhotra. The cost of admission to any recommended show is of no concern to Encore, nor the price of beer, nor the cleanliness of the venue restrooms. Encore has one goal and one goal only in the delivery of Encore's Picks, for you to have a kick-ass musical experience. Encore's Picks is a trademark of the multinational corporation DJ Spin Cycle. All copy and trade therein is solely possessed. Here's Encore Malhotra!
Good morning, Madison. Happy spring. It is April 4th, and you can get your loving cup treat today as the Rolling Stones tribute band playing at Red Rooster. Yeah, a bunch of friends in that band, so check that out.
Be a good one.
Yeah. Tomorrow at the Crystal Corner, it's a CD release, album release. M. Shays, Mossman, The Melioris, and DJ Dipstick. I can't say that name on air. And then, of course, April 10th, and we'll have them in studio later on today's show, the German art students another album release along with the Lower Fifth at the Gamma Ray Bar. So, yeah, a bunch of music for this week. Get out and enjoy it.
Thank you so much, Encore. We'll be right back with segment two. We're going to take you to the Appalachian Trail. Thank you so much, Encore. Great music this morning. At the very top of that break, too, that Yola Tingo. Man, I love that band. Thank you, Encore Malhotra. It's Friday O'Clock Buzz. I'm Andy Moore, segment two. Question: what does a former state government reporter do when he's done chasing politicians down for interviews? If you're former Wisconsin State Journal writer Carrie Siegel, you chase hikers down for interviews. On the Appalachian Trail, Siegel's new book, A Talk in the Woods, a play on Bryson's best-selling title, A Walk in the Woods, is a series of stories told from the trail by those who tread it. Carrie Siegel joins us now by phone, and welcome to the Friday Buzz, Carrie.
Hi, thanks, Andy.
In the book, you say that every hiker has a story, but what is your own? How did you become committed to walking the Appalachian Trail?
Well, I hiked it for the first time when I was a member of UW-Hofer's when I was a student at UW. And I've hiked it many times since then, just small sections of it, but I always wanted to hike the whole thing. And after I left the State Journal, that's what I decided I'd try for a while.
And you call hikers, you among them, 21st century pilgrims. What do you mean by that?
Some hikers are called thru-hikers, and that's they start at Springer Mountain in Georgia or Katahdin in Maine, which are the two endpoints of the trail, and then they hike about 2,200 miles from one to the other. And so they're on kind of a pilgrimage, kind of like in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. They're headed to one or either Katahdin or Springer to hike the whole trail.
Not to get in the weeds off the trail here, but what are the advantages and disadvantages of starting from the northernmost point versus the southernmost point?
Well, most people start at Springer in March or April because it's spring there.
Is that Georgia? I'm sorry for people who don't know.
I got to tell you. Yeah, Springer Mountain is in Georgia. And then they hike through 14 states to Katahdin, which is in northern Maine. And that's about most people do it that way. And some people start at Katahdin usually at the end of May or early June and hike to Springer, which is not the advisable way to do it because Maine in June and July is very buggy and very wet.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of black flies and mosquitoes. So that's the wrong way to hike the Appalachian Trail.
And did you go from south to north yourself?
Yeah, I started at Springer, but later than most people, I started towards the end of May.
How long does it take the average hiker to hike from Georgia to Maine or vice versa?
Yeah, about 6 months for the average hiker.
Wow. That's quite a trek. You know, it's a lot of time too. An outsider might see a person who does this kind of thing, that hike, and say, "Well, there's a very privileged person. They have the time and resources to prepare for and execute a very private, personal goal." Is that a fair assessment?
Not really. Most of the people on the Appalachian Trail are recent college graduates, or maybe a few years out of college. So most of them don't have much money.
Mm-hmm.
They do have more time because they're not married or they've mm-hmm. left their job or career. So that'd be, and the other, and the next most greatest people are the people that are retired. So they do have more time and more money usually.
Uh-huh. And that's an interesting way to frame it. Not necessarily money, but time. Give us a little more flavor of the kinds of people, more specifically the kinds of folks that you ran into and that we hear from in A Talk in the Woods.
Well, I met all kinds of folks, and they're all very interesting people. And a few of the people that I wrote about most was a mother I met. I heard about when I hiked about 400 miles, and I heard that there was a mother hiking with 2 4-year-old twins ahead of me.
Whoa.
And I thought that would be a great story. So I caught them and hiked with them for a little while. And there are a lot of people that are on there because they've just had interesting events happen in their life. There are people that have recovered from serious from cancer, people that are alcoholics and trying to change their life, people that have had serious injuries and trying to walk themselves back to health on the trail, and just regular college students that are just out for an adventure, and people like me.
If you're just hopping in, I'm talking with Kerry Siegel. He's a former Wisconsin State Journal reporter whose new book chronicles the experience of hiking. The Appalachian Trail is called A Talk in the Woods, Voices Along the Appalachian Trail. But Kerry, forgive me if this is a dumb question, but there must be days when you see no one on the trail.
Well, there were for me, there are days when you see no one, but there's a big bubble of hikers that starts in March or April. So, and there are lots of people on the trail at that time heading south to north. But I started when there were fewer people on the trail, and as I got farther north, I became one of the fewer people on the trail. And by the time it was September, and I was up in New York and getting close to Connecticut, I was probably one of the last hikers that was still hiking north. So at that time, I saw fewer people on the trail, but there were always people to see and talk to on the trail.
And people have their own approach to making and executing this experience, and depend on different kinds of support that comes through in the book too. What kind of support did you have, if I'm using that word correctly?
Well, people that start in the bubble, there are people along the trail called trail angels. They'll meet hikers at road crossings with food or water, and I didn't really have much of that because I started late. So I occasionally met a trail angel who gave me some food or some water, or there are hikers or there are people along the trail that put people up in their homes. But for the most part, I was hiking it without trail angel support.
When you encountered the hikers that appear in this wonderful book, knowing you as a top-notch reporter from your days at the State Journal, I know that you must have been transparent with them. And so how did that go? Did you say, "I'm talking with you, but I'm also recording notes on this, and I intend to put it in a book"? Is that how you handled it?
Yeah, well, I had a notebook, so they knew I was recording notes. But I talked to most people that I met to learn a little bit about them. And if I thought they made a good story, I would tell them that I was a former reporter and writing a book about the trail, and I asked if I could speak with them. And nearly everyone said yes. Then I'd stop on the trail with them for whatever time it took, maybe half an hour, an hour, and we just talk.
Let's stay with the journalism of it. What's the difference between interviewing a hiker on the Appalachian Trail and a Supreme Court justice in the halls of the state capitol in Madison?
A Supreme Court justice is probably a little more careful about what they say, and they're more concerned about, well, they're not going to tell me much about what they're really doing in terms of the cases they're deciding.
Mm-hmm.
But I talk to justice more often when they're running for office, and then they're going to be careful about what they say to me.
In the months of your hike up the Appalachian Trail, it probably goes without saying that you must have learned a little bit about life hiking the trail. What can you think of? What can you say that you learned from someone else?
Okay, well, that's a question I haven't given much thought to, but most of the people on the trail, as I said, are in their 20s, and they're out there to learn a lot about what the meaning of life is. But for me, since I was in my 60s, I don't think I learned a lot about myself or life. I just think I don't think I learned a whole lot, actually. I just enjoyed the experience.
That's not a bad place to be, to come away with enrichment, if nothing else.
Yeah, that's correct. I just enjoyed the same thing I did enjoy as a reporter, listening to people's stories and writing about them.
Yeah. Finally, here in just a minute or so we have left together, there may be someone listening this morning who's been considering taking on the Appalachian Trail, but maybe they're on the fence and maybe they're intimidated by the thought of it all. What do you have to say to that person?
Well, I've encouraged my own nieces and nephews to do it. If you like the outdoors and you like hiking and you like adventure, it's a great way to spend. You can do it as a thru-hiker, 6 months, or just do it in sections over the course of many years, as some of the people that I wrote about. But I'd say take some time out of your life before you get married or before you have kids or even after you are married and have kids and do it for the great experience that it is.
Kerry Siegel, thank you for joining us on the Friday Buzz. I hope you have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, Andy. Thanks a lot.
You're so welcome. Kerry Siegel is the author of A Walk in the Woods, Voices Along the Appalachian Trail. All righty then. Musicians are on the premises. Coming up next, two lifetime members of the German art students join us to talk about their new record, Diamonds and Queens. This is WRT 89.9 in Madison, Wisconsin. And this is the German art students.
Last night I had a dream that I became Steve McQueen in a green Ford Fastback Lightning machine. Pounding down the streets of San Francisco, chased by some bad guys in a Charger. Spinning my wheels in reverse, blowing up some smoke. I like to dream.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. I can't believe I'm giving musicians technical advice here. We're getting all plugged in. But meanwhile, nearly a quarter of a century ago, a quartet of Madison eccentrics got together to place their tongue in their collective cheek and write pop rock songs that blended the sound of the modern lovers with the sensibilities of Jonathan Winters. The German art students got very good at this over the years. I'm pleased that you're pleased by that description. And over the years, they've released a half a dozen albums and a large handful of EPs and related products and merchandise. And now comes Diamonds and Queens, from which we just heard the title track, some of it anyway. That's the band's brand new baby, which will be christened at an album release show next Thursday night, April 10, at the Gamma Ray Bar on the Square. Lead guitarist Kirk Wall and drummer Randy Baldwin are lifetime members of the German Art Students, and they join us now.
Thank you. Thanks,
Hi, Andy.
So that's all the time we have.
There we go.
Kirk, I get the impression that the German Art Students at the start was a DIY project before anyone knew what DIY was.
Definitely. It was purely a project. Andy just came back from his first teaching gig in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and he was writing stuff and I was writing stuff. And I knew a guy that worked at like a Comfort mattress store that played drums. I'm like, okay, let's mess around. And like it was during the dark period of rock when people were doing all the Nine Inch Nails stuff and the Marilyn Manson.
Mm-hmm. Serious, it's a heart attack.
Yeah, exactly.
The mattress factory guy was soon replaced by somebody who came to the show and said, I need to be the drummer for this band. Oh. I know I'm telling the short story of that, Randy, but give us the longer piece.
I had been hanging out with Andy, our bass player, and I had met Kirk and Andy while I was hosting a show on Wart called Freak Scene in the early 90s, and they were in a band called Danger Prone Daphne. And anyway, once they started playing, they played, and I saw the first show that they had with Annalise, our fourth band member. It was her first show after she joined, and I was blown away. It was right up my alley. It was my sensibility, and their drummer happened to be on his way out of town, so I joined, and the four of us has been together since 1997.
Crazy. Yeah. Kirk, I mentioned the Modern Lovers in the introduction because I've always appreciated the Jonathan Richman playfulness and humor Gas brings to music, but how do you think humor and satire factor into the band's creations?
Well, it's kind of like a tightrope where we did like a theatrical shtick early on with Hello, we're from Bremen, blah, 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 at our live shows. But then it was kind of like, we'll let the music kind of stand out on its own. It's basically just writing sensibility. When I look at people that can write from the heart and stuff, I'm like, God, how do you do that? I mean, it's not like you want to take a snide approach to everything you write, but it's just our sensibility, basically.
I like your word choice there. People hear writing from the heart, and they immediately think it must, and I'll include myself in this group, it must be a reflection of relationships or love. Writing from humor has to be written from the heart as well.
True, that's true. I guess it's a voice, you know, and that's like, and it's not necessarily our collective voice because we've written other songs that just strayed away from, let's not stay in the humor format.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's just a sensibility.
I prefer to describe it as quirky rather than humorous.
Okay.
That's a good way.
Yeah. The other night at rehearsal, Annalise said she had a friend who for years referred to us as Annalise's joke band.
Oh, dear.
And we don't really think of ourselves as a joke band. We're just kind of a little off kilter.
All you have to do, listeners, to get a whiff of the quirkiness of the German Art Students is to look at some of the names of the tracks. The new record has songs with titles like Garbage Can Full of Gasoline and Punk Rock Car. In fact, the band is really good at satirizing being a band. Jim Wilson, if you can help me with this, let's listen to a little of a song off the another song off the new album, just a little bit, and we'll come back and talk. This is None Shall Cover Us. Here's the German Art Students with None Shall Cover Us.
We'll be right back.
That's None Shall Cover Us from the German Art Students' brand new album, Diamonds and Queens. The album release show happens next Thursday night, April 10th, at the Gamma Ray Bar. Drummer Randy and guitarist Kirk are with us here, wishing that they had free coffee. Without Elliot here, we didn't have any coffee, I don't think.
Kirk, no, I got some.
Good. Oh, you
we're
got some free
up.
Coffee. Good.
Elliot set
it's delicious.
Up.
Yeah, and I always say musicians never complain about it because it's free. Kirk, the songs are fun to listen to just sitting around or driving your car, but Gas is a live band event. How would you describe what it feels like to play songs live with the German Art Students?
It's a whole nother level of playing. In fact, I was absent during years of COVID, 2023 or 22, and it was one of those things. It's totally different between, right, like we're learning to enjoy recording and add more dimension to the recording, but playing live, that's how we started out, was just the shows at OK's, whatever shows we could pick up, playing at the Union or wherever. So it was kind of, we were always rehearsing for the live show, even sometimes more for than the songwriting.
You have anything to add to that, Randy?
I think we're all on the same wavelength. Whenever we get together, whether it's in a rehearsal space, in a recording studio, on stage, we're all on the same wavelength. We're kind of have the same sensibility, we have the same expectations and non-expectations of each other that just has bonded us together all this time.
Yeah, it shows. When you see a band that has good energy, it's oftentimes very enjoyable, but it's truly infectious with German Art Students when you're in the audience with them. Randy, yes. I mentioned, and Kirk sort of alluded to this with the COVID, but the band's been slugging away for 25 years or so, but not always together. Individual members have taken sabbaticals, sometimes prolonged ones, from the act. Without going into examples of that, talk about the band's staying power through all these lapses and changes.
We're kind of all have been in the same stages of life. When Andy and Kirk started the band, it was from... what they've told us over the years is it was kind of a response to the serious band they were in before that was doing all the touring around the Midwest and trying to make it and everything. And they just wanted to do something that had fun. And so we were all kind of in various stages of jobs and family and things like that. And there was a point where we thought, oh, we might get some attention further outside of Madison. And then it's kind of like, well, we don't even need that. We just have fun playing together. And it's fun just to be this band that does whatever we can do around here. And so as we've gone through different stages throughout the past 25 years and beyond, this has just been something like that. Kirk often says, this is the best part of my day when I come to a rehearsal, and that's the way a band should be. It's like, we do this because it's fun, and we happen to be kind of good at it.
Not always the case. We only have about...
I'm just going to say one thing. We do it instead because model railroading is more expensive.
Gee.
Sorry.
That's such a German art student's line. We only have about 20 seconds left, Kirk, but do you have the same musical heroes now that you did 25 years ago?
Yes. Yeah, I pretty much do.
Who are they?
I go back to my first British punk invasion, and that's like Buzzcocks, Undertones, Rosillos, the pop, the revved up pop bands are kind of my template.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like a lot of shoegaze stuff I'm into late. So if we can get both of them to marry each other, then we have the perfect marriage.
You can hear that in your playing, too. Randy and Kirk, thanks for joining us.
Thank you
Friday
so much.
Buzz, and good
thanks,
luck
Sandy,
with the show next week. The German Art Students' brand new album is called Diamonds and Queens. You just heard some of it here on the Friday Buzz. The album release show happens next Thursday night, April 10th at the Gamma Rave Bar. Hey, I want to thank Jim Wilson, as always, Ankur Malhotra, DJ Spin Cycle. I don't know if you're on the air. I think you are tomorrow afternoon. Yes. No, I'm Kate. I take that back. But we do have Mud Acres coming up after the Insurgent Radio Kiosk. Hey, Elliot LeBrun, we missed you this morning. We hope you feel better and that you'll be back here on that nice new carpeting out in the front office next week. This is the Friday Buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Have a great damn weekend. Aloha. Kama'aina.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 4th. Let us embrace the darkness. Not the political dark ages being pushed on us by today's regressive right-wing forces, but nature's own pure darkness of night. Unfortunately, we Homo sapiens have largely blacked out nature's billions of beacons in the night sky, which have both dazzled and guided Earth's creatures for eons. Ironically, the tool used to wash out natural light is light. In all cities and most towns, the glare of artificial lighting has pulled an impervious curtain across our sky. Especially garish and entirely useless is the lighting of corporate skyscrapers throughout the night with blinding spotlights that keep us from seeing the genuinely majestic view beyond. I was lucky as a child to spend summer evenings on my Aunt Eula's farm, entranced as darkness fell and the celestial show began. But today, most children don't even know it's there. Indeed, 80% of Americans never see the stream of the Milky Way galaxy that is our home, much less seeing the spectacular cosmic beams shining from trillions of miles beyond. This doesn't mean we should just stumble around in the dark. Of course we need light. But try a little common sense. 1. Stop spotlighting buildings. 2. Don't point outdoor lighting up at the sky. Shine it down on our streets, parking lots, stadiums, and porches where the illumination is actually needed. 3. Remember